I'm Emily.
Hi, and hi, I'm Trey.
We want to tell you a little story about how we started this podcast. About a decade ago, Trey and I used to work together in a retail clothing store.
The store that shall not be named, Men's Haberdashery. And we really hit it off, if you couldn't tell. Honestly, those were the days.
So many jokes. Like Gary Busey.
And the announcements on the intercom. This is your captain speaking.
And Gonzo!
We were hilarious.
We are shamelessly, intensely self-aware of our own hilarity.
Because we thought we were comedians, we figured we should have a podcast. But about what?
I mean, since we both had a background in the arts, maybe something about that.
Right. We thought because both of us are in fashion, also you were in costuming and photography, and me in singing, corporate espionage, and theater, it totally made sense.
Hey, did you just say corporate espionage?
Look, I signed an NDA. Let's move on.
Okay. You know, it was like one of those things where you're like, let's start a garage band, and it's exciting, and then you realize that you don't really have a garage to practice in.
And then years later, like 8 years later, we decided to make it happen.
We bought a proverbial garage.
It's so nice in here.
Mm-hmm. Do you want something from the mini fridge?
Do we have anything chocolate?
I got you.
Yes! So because we both love romanticism, we both love art, so it became the Modern Romantic Podcast. And here we are. Do you know what the best part of the story is?
We finally came down to Earth and realized we aren't comedians.
No! We get to interview artful heroes and creators while inspiring others.
Okay, yes, yes. Plus, we have a wonderful, supportive community. I love connecting people.
Plus, we're still delirious. I mean, hilarious.
Let's never lose that.
Never. Hello, and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism by featuring passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, I am a series of misheard song lyrics. Hi, I'm Troy. Just kidding, I'm Trey.
You know, what's funny is I thought, when you texted me that earlier, I thought you were telling me that, like, that was just a random thought you were having.
No, that was like going to be the legitimate opening.
I was like, I mean, it's true. I feel like you get called Troy too much. But that's okay. We know who you really are. And yes. Hi, I'm Emily.
Sorry, I did not mean to derail you.
People call me M without asking if it's okay. They just start in. It happened the other day even. So anyway, welcome to the podcast, everybody. Tonight, we're delighted to have a remarkable guest on the podcast, Paola DeLage, an artist and art instructor at the 510 Art Lab in Sauk Center, Minnesota. Her vibrant creations are inspiring, and she makes her students feel comfortable and confident. So welcome to the podcast, Paola.
Hello. Yay. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Of course.
So I know you from the Art Lab,
mm-hmm.
and we had Gwen on, it's been a couple months now, I think. We had Gwen from the Art Lab on, and so I was really excited we get to talk to you as well. So it's kind of cool because you're just sort of across town.
Yeah. Yep.
Paola, one of the first things that I would like to know, and that I think many of our listeners would like to know, is can you tell us a little bit about your artistic journey?
Yeah. So like as Emily said, right now I'm volunteering at the Art Lab. And the Art Lab itself has been like such a great opportunity to like learn about painting and like leading a class, which I think every painter or person who like paints and does art, you know, kind of has like a fantasy where they would be a teacher. And now I get to kind of live that fantasy through the Art Lab. So it's really great. It's a huge honor. And I also get to meet a lot of different artists there. So I find little inspirations in different people. And that's also very curating to me and my art. But I'm really nerdy. I initially started my artistic journey through like anime, watching cartoons and anime.
Yes.
It's so embarrassing to say, but you know what? There's a lot of cool stuff out there. So that's where I started my artistic journey, you know, watching a lot of anime, late night Toonami, Adult Swim anime. Yep. And I went down that rabbit hole. And then I got involved in I think I watched a movie called The Girl with the Pearl Earring, which is based off of the painting. And I remember watching that. And then that totally threw me into a different direction of art, where it was like classical art and European art. So that was really cool. And now I'm just trying to develop some really solid painting skills so that one day maybe I can paint classical European style portraits.
That would be fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We do have a question. So yeah. What's your favorite anime series?
That's a really hard question because I have so many different animes I enjoy. But I guess my favorite would have to be, it's a really girly one. It's like Ouran High School Host Club. Because it's so wholesome and it's so like, it's you know, it's such a nice, like, feel-good anime. But I also really enjoy, like, rewatching Dragon Ball Z and what was the other one? It's like one of the classics, and I showed it to my husband too when I introduced him to anime and stuff. But like Dragon Ball Z or in High School Host Club, Inuyasha is another top one. Yeah.
I was gonna ask when you mentioned Toonami of like waking up at 2 a.m. and then you just hear the ending theme song of Inuyasha playing.
Yes. And you're just, that's when you know it's like really late.
That's like, that's go to bed time. All right. Yep. I'm done.
Fell asleep on the couch or something.
Yes. So with that, so you've mentioned anime, you've mentioned some more of the classical. How has that kind of influenced your art and the evolution of your art over the last couple of years?
Sure. So, you know, initially starting with anime and like cartoons and stuff, everything was very like two-dimensional for me. Drawings and stuff like that were just two-dimensional. I didn't really pick up painting materials yet either. I had just started doing like pencil and paper, pen and paper. I did do a little bit of watercolor because I found you could color in the, you know, like the anime characters and stuff. But now with the classical things, it's like your pencil is your underlay. It's like what's underneath your painting versus like anime, the pencil is on top and it's like your primary material, right? So now it's the underlayer, and I'm noticing that with like the classical paintings, there's so many layers to a painting that help it bring it to life and feel three-dimensional, and also like bring the viewer into the painting and guide them through. Whereas like anime, I feel as though like is more 2D, and it's been really challenging for sure.
I like that you bring up like what some of the different art styles is, or maybe some of the flaws or the drawbacks of certain things, or what mm-hmm. others highlight. There's always that thing in like art of like, there's, I don't know what it is, or I just can't quite put my finger on what it is and to describe it. But I think that really encapsulates that. So I feel mm-hmm. like you've got a really good grasp on art.
Oh, thank you. I try to keep myself like well-informed, and I'm always open to new varieties of art, new ideas of art, new methods. I really enjoy like experiencing different arts and just trying to keep myself inspired by different things. I feel like that way I can get like a new point of view or maybe a new visual that helps like guide me through my art journey.
I love that. That's such a good mm-hmm. answer. I was going to ask if you had some kind of method, or I don't know how else to ask this. I guess any kind of, I don't want to say the word ritual, but I guess maybe that's the closest word to use.
Sure.
That allow you to tap into your artistry. Like, do you have anything that you do that's like, I always put the brushes on this side and I always put the, you know, or is there anything like that that you?
Not really, but I will say I do find that I have to clean like my space before I start. Like everything has to be really like clean, wiped down before I get started. And I really enjoy painting and drawing in front of like a big window. So right now our kitchen has a big window and I find myself just like setting up at the kitchen and painting. And then it's dinner time and I have to like move everything. So but yeah, if like my area isn't tidy and if it's not clean, I don't find myself like really sitting down to starting and painting and stuff.
That's relatable. I find that to be a hard mental obstacle to get past if I have a bunch of clutter or if I have stuff around me that I've done it before when for sewing, where if my sewing room is a mess already, which it is right now, it just is. That's why it has a door. But yeah, it's really easy to shut the door and then forget it's a mess, which is terrible because I don't normally like to live that way. Like the rest of my
No.
house isn't that bad. But it's if I go in there, I don't it's like painful somehow to my soul and I can't start until I get a the space cleaned up enough to where I can feel like I can start.
Start again. Yep.
Yeah, there's a reason why I have the camera currently angled the way that it is. So you can't see the sewing menagerie that's currently happening to my right.
It's true. That's why I have a blank background. Because I was like, yeah, my space is not clean right now.
Well, it kind of brings up an interesting question of there's so many thoughts running inside of our heads, and like we have to get that out in some capacity, and that can be a little bit chaotic. And then we are the makers of said chaos, and then we also have to be the ones to clean it up. And no, like Emily said, I'm just going to close the door and just remind myself tomorrow that it's there.
I want there to be little elves cleaning it up when I'm not looking or sleeping, and that's not really a thing. It's a lie. It's a terrible lie.
I agree with Trey though. I think as people who are like artistic, we have so many ideas going about us. It's just really easy to stop and start between projects or start on something new because you felt inspired.
That like Renaissance costumes, I will be in the middle of something. I'll be like, oh, I could do this. And I like go hop to something else and I go finish that sort of thing. And meanwhile, Seth is like, so have you finished one of these? I'm like, no.
Right. Hold up how many fingers of unfinished products you have.
Oh man. Same.
So like we were talking about some different art styles, and you had mentioned excuse me, you had mentioned experimenting with watercolor and like with pencil drawings and that sort of thing. Do you find your inspiration comes out in a particular medium more often, or does the medium kind of depend on what your idea is?
That's a great question. I think the inspiration often comes from like a subject. So, and then I find out, that maybe the medium isn't something I'm even remotely familiar with. And so that usually starts a deep dive into that medium. And then I have to go get the supplies and then I have to come back and try to recreate it. And by then, my brain is probably like, well, you're not really that interested in that anymore. So it's usually like a topic, something that inspires me. So, for example, I was really intrigued in painting like oceanscapes and oceans and beaches. And so I have a ton of like paintings that I've given away and gifted of like these ocean things. So all I had was like the blues, the greens, the whites. And that's what filled my painting area for a while. It's just like my ocean paintings. And I did it in acrylic and watercolor. But now I'm kind of like shifting over to like the more classical stuff. So now I'm finding that I have to like expand my paints, sorry, my paints.
Yeah.
So.
That's a lot more dark tones, isn't it? Yeah. Do you stick with acrylic then, or do you switch to like oil or something else?
I have started with acrylic. I guess that was like the easiest medium to start with because it dries quickly.
Oh yeah.
Whereas oil takes longer to dry, but oil is like what I'm striving to do. Like I'm striving to be able to paint in oil and also paint more like flesh tone, which I have to like go from painting oceans to painting still life. And still life is like really boring to me right now. So I'm like procrastinating doing that.
So what if you could like make the subject more interesting? We could dress them up like an Inuyasha character and have that as your still life.
I probably could, but that might actually be a lot to start off with.
Okay.
That's a still life is usually just like an apple or a bowl or something.
Fine. Okay.
I know. And then if I do get super ambitious though, Trey, if I do get super ambitious, mm-hmm. I'm like my own worst critic. And I will just be like, why did you even do this? This is terrible. And I'll just discourage myself because I have tried like going from 0 to 100. And then, yeah, that happens.
Yep. Super relatable. Isn't that terrible what our brains do to us, though? Like, that was me with watercolor. It still is. Mm-hmm. I love watercolor so much. And I don't know enough. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, well, I'll just play. Because that's how you learn, too.
Yeah.
And I did that, too. Like, what they did, the plein air, which is outdoor painting.
Yeah.
They came here to the house.
Okay.
And it was really cool. It was so cool to have other people paint their depiction of what they were seeing in my backyard. That was phenomenal. And everybody's was so good. And I'm mm-hmm. sitting there, and it was probably a mistake because like art, like painting really is something that I'm super new to.
Okay.
I'm going to say it like that because I don't want to say that I'm not a painter, because I don't really want to say I would never paint because I could one day I'll get there. But I got out with my watercolors and I'm like, and everybody else is like super practiced and they're out there with their acrylics and they're doing this amazing, amazing job. Within an hour, the one person was done. And I'm sitting here with like my kindergarten looking watercolor.
Yep.
With stick people. Not really that. But I was like, I can't show this to anybody. You know, I felt like that, even though it was like, and I just sort of found myself going, I'm new, guys. I'm new. I don't do mm-hmm. that. But yeah, go ahead, Trey.
Well, I was sorry to interrupt you, but I was also going to say you're also the person that said that you're new to like glass fusion art. And then you just showed me that you're auctioning off one of your pieces and it looks incredible.
Thank you.
And you're fairly new to that and it looks incredible.
Well, you know, everybody's art brain clicks with different mediums differently than others. And so like what you said earlier, you said that you see layers in these paintings, and that's not something that people, like, unless you take an art class or unless you're told that, like you just said, not everybody realizes that maybe that's how it's done. And so this sounds really elementary to some people, but like I didn't necessarily realize that. Yeah, I know you want to go like back to front, but then when you miss something, then how do you, so like I was struggling with that, but like glass fusion clicked, like that clicked with me.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense. So Paola, from like your perspective with Emily's statement about like watching things click with some and maybe some are taking a little bit longer, mm-hmm. with you as an educator, how do you kind of reconcile with that aspect?
So I guess the way I view like the paintings, like as far as watercolor, acrylics and oils go, even pastels, is there are like fundamentals to it. And if you're approaching these mediums without first studying how that medium works and how it reacts and how it maybe like what brushes are best to use, it's really easy to get discouraged and kind of compare your work to somebody else who does know all of this stuff. And you're comparing yourself And that's why you get, I feel like that's why we get discouraged, because we're diving into like a medium that requires a lot more than we actually think it does, because other people make it look so easy. So.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. So like when I say I was painting like oceanscapes and stuff, like I got lucky, I think, and I was initially really inspired by a tutorial that taught me how to paint. Mm-hmm. And I think I got lucky with her because she explained the technique behind it. And she explained why we were doing these layers in this order, right? So having like a tutorial teach you how to paint is good up to a certain point, because it's only going to teach you how to make that one piece that one way. Versus taking that material that you learned in the video and applying it to different paintings, and something that you have to keep practicing, right? So you have to keep doing these paintings. Applying that knowledge, I think you'll see growth and you'll be more pleased with your work. But diving into something that quickly is, I feel like we're bound to just be disappointed with our work regardless, because we don't have like the underlying knowledge. But that's not to say you shouldn't do it. Like, you absolutely should do it. Just keep going. Don't stop.
Yeah. That's really good advice.
Mm-hmm. I make mention of this, but something that you said kind of sparked it about the application of that.
Yeah.
Like, you, if you just take the tutorial, like you said, you're only going to make that one thing. But if you take what you've learned and you try something new, they're going to be elements of what you've tried in the next thing. Mm-hmm. And then you can use that and be like, oh, well, that part was easy, but now I have to learn something slightly different. And it's this building of those skill sets until you kind of get to that to that mastery level, like what Emily was saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's been around since like ever though. It's been known that, you know, like the great masters, like Michelangelo, Raphael, Leonardo, they all were, you know, like students at one point themselves who had to copy other painters who were already teaching, correct? So like it's, you have to learn through the process of copying who you're aspiring to be, right? Like art is just, you're borrowing from established artists, and hopefully you're giving them credit and not plagiarizing, right? But you're borrowing from them and learning from them through their process. And I think that's a huge element in art school, is they have you study whatever technique, whatever medium you're trying to achieve, is you're studying other painters in that medium and you're recreating what they already did. I think that's called like a case study or like a study of a painting or something. Mm-hmm. So. You have to copy somebody at some point in your journey.
At some point, because I've definitely copied Emily on some of the things that I've done. Definitely.
Yeah, it's all part of the learning process.
So for you, and like thinking of the application of what you've learned, how do you take that concept or that emotion and then transition that onto whatever your canvas may be? How do you choose the colors? How do you choose the type of paint? Can you talk to us about that process?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I hadn't really thought about it, but I guess like with my ocean landscapes, I wanted to feel a sense of calm, and seeing these paintings made me calm. And so recreating them was like a huge therapy and kind of like a stress management for me. Painting the oceans, like you paint a lot of blues, greens, you know, you paint the sky sometimes. So all of that was like really therapeutic and just relaxing.
And what about a still life? I'm curious, because you said it was kind of boring for you. So what's that process look like?
I'm not really sure yet. I think it's just like the different tones, maybe. Like we're probably going to do more earth tones when I do a still life, or the subject matter doesn't quite capture my interest as much as like painting an ocean does. Like that gets me really excited, but like painting an apple or a pear or something might not be as exciting for me.
Is there another approach that you could take that, like, that's my first thought, and I don't know the process, or maybe the shading of an apple is something to be learned in order to take that next step toward mm-hmm. classical art. Is there another approach you could take that would be a little bit more appealing to you?
I have been doing some research and all of it is leading back to still life. So I think I'm just going to have to get over that and just do it.
I mean, you could have like a Pablo Picasso and do a whole blue phase. So you get paired up with a pear or an apple or something, and then you just change the color of it to something that's maybe a little bit more appealing.
Maybe, actually. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I don't have to stick to realism, right?
Right.
But I think the whole concept of why I have to do still life is that you have to understand like flesh tones. So, okay. I mean, trust me, I have tried to look into like, okay, can I do something else? It's so boring. Yeah.
All roads lead back to still life.
Yes, unfortunately they do.
Which kind of brings up a question about like some other creative challenges. Can you share some personal insights into how you've tackled those creative obstacles?
Let's see. I think the best approach I found is when I'm feeling like stuck in a painting, I go back to the tutorials on YouTube and I try to, even if it's not the same subject, like I said, different teachers on YouTube will like teach you different techniques. So my go-to is always to go back to YouTube, look for articles that maybe help me address part of a painting that I'm struggling with, and which is very time-consuming, actually. YouTube has so many videos and so many different teaching techniques. It's kind of overwhelming, but if you just keep at it, you're bound to find something.
Right. It's that way for photography, too. When I get stuck editing a photo... I was doing a composite once that I didn't like. I don't do composites typically, where I'm taking mm-hmm. different photos and I'm pasting them into each other to make like one big picture. Mm-hmm. And so I struggle with like, okay, does the shadow look right? And it helps to like walk away, you know, and come back and look at it again. And what is it that it's missing? I can't tell what it's missing. And I don't, unless you know the terminology to go look it up, you know. So, yeah, I've done that. I've turned to YouTube and then I watch a bunch of videos and I try to, like, absorb what it is these other composite artists are doing that I'm somehow missing. And you're right, there are a ton of videos. But then mm-hmm. you can learn, I learned even today because I was taking a class today. And mm-hmm. even if you get, at some point you get to where you're taking these classes or you're listening to these videos and they're teaching you stuff you already know. But every now and then they have that one tidbit and it's the one thing that like you didn't know before. And it's that one tidbit that you walk away and went, yeah, I'm glad I listened to that whole like 2 hour thing.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And I will say though, like some of the tutorials on YouTube with painting and stuff, they're great if you have some idea of painting. They're probably not so great for like an absolute complete beginner, because I have tried to tackle like the tutorials that teach you how to paint like the classical, like the old masters, and I'm just like, I can't do this. I'm obviously really far behind on the fundamentals, so I can't even do it.
That is so, like, from a, just to make sure I'm on the same page, like from a like a technique perspective mm-hmm. or from like mm-hmm. a subject matter, or can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, it's absolutely 100% like the technique, I feel. For example, like you have to know anatomy to be able to paint a portrait, right? Like the old masters. So I have to obviously not just like dive into this painting with paint, I actually have to know how to like draw a human figure based on the proper proportions, anatomy, mm-hmm. all of that good stuff.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a challenge. I mm-hmm. like me and the stick figures, I feel like that. But yeah, that's why they make those little wooden people that you can pose and bend, right?
Yeah. Yep. The model figures, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, I didn't know the name of it.
Which, strangely enough, they sell that at IKEA. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like $20, and I just saw one randomly sitting around some art, just
yes.
sitting there. Like, so why you can are look you cool. here? While buying IKEA furniture.
It's like the little model figures that are up for adoption that didn't have homes, and so they want you to adopt them and name them and take them home mm-hmm. for $20.
I will name you Paul. So, I mean, I had a thought and then it left me. Sorry. Go ahead.
If you think about like one of the more, I guess, disastrous pieces you've ever created, or something that you've done that has just not turned out over and over, and like, at least I guess yeah. with canvas you can paint over it and start again. But mm-hmm. how do you personally recover from that? When you mess it up and you're like, ugh, it's mm-hmm. the end of the frustration. You yeah. walk away. What makes you come mm-hmm. back? How do you get over that?
I guess what do you call this? Like, where you like a challenge? I like a challenge. I'm not like a defeatist okay. for very long. So I will walk away from it, but then I'm coming back and I'm just like, there's no way this thing is going to like beat me. I have to come back and I have to like overcome it.
I love like,
that. I will be... No, whatever. Okay, so I have to come back to it. My mind's always going to, like, come back to that situation and say, like, hey, we have to address the elephant in the room. We have to come back to that painting. It's just a canvas. Start again. And then learn from it. Just learn. Just reflect. Like, what went wrong? Is there too much contrast? Is there not enough, like, gradients? You know, like, what layer maybe I did too soon? And what can I slow down and do some more research on? So, yeah, that's how I would address that.
I love that.
Yeah, thank you.
It's so funny to see in so many different mediums. Like, I think back to conversations with Josh that we had when he was talking to us about some cooking-related things, or we've talked about sewing before, or even with painting. The process mm-hmm. of going too quickly with something. Things move at their own pace, so we kind of need to, it will work the way that it needs to, but we need to give it the space in order to do that. And if we rush too quickly, mm-hmm. the final product just kind of comes out bleh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, that's a
yeah, very... Like...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like with costume design too, I feel like if you maybe like jump too quickly into something, you're not maybe as prepared, but you can learn from like bad costumes maybe that you make or sew. You can always learn from them. So
yeah, your analogy with the I'm not gonna let it beat me was zippers for me. Sewing in a zipper was the same. It was how many times do you have to sew a zipper so that like it has to end at the same place, and they magically sometimes don't. And it took me a long time to figure out why. Like, I don't understand why this isn't. Yeah. And I'm also impatient. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to do like a basting stitch first. I wanted to just magically sew in perfect the first time. How do I get from A to B, from where I'm at now to mm-hmm. getting it perfect the first time? What do I have to do to get there? And I finally figured it out. But yeah, that was a process. And it is kind of that, like, I'm not going to let a zipper beat me. And I think I've had that mentality, too. Like, whatever it is that's the hardest thing, even if I don't like the thing, like, maybe you don't like painting apples or whatever. Mm-hmm. I have done the thing mentally where I'm like, you know what? Now I have to be the best at it. Because, and we talked about this before on the podcast, like inventory, where Trey and I used to work, we used to do inventory, and I hate inventory. Hated inventory. So annoying. Hated inventory. And I decided that the only way for me to dislike it less was to become the absolute master of inventory, where I was like, at any given time, I knew how just about how much of anything there was in the store of any type at any given time.
Yeah.
And so I had to get that good to be like, all right, I hate this, but I'm also like stupid mm-hmm. good at it. So even though I didn't want to be, it allowed me to get through it. And maybe that's an answer for apples.
Yes. I can see where you're going with that. I have to just be like disciplined to just learn how to just do it.
Yeah. The annoying part.
Yep.
I'm a little reminded of the Mary Poppins song. In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. And just like that, the job's a game. A little bit of Julie Andrews there for you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good old Julie Andrews. Julie, if you're listening, send us an email at emily@themodrom.com. We'll have you on the show.
And yes, we will
Julie
have you. Sorry, go ahead.
From The Sound of Music?
Yeah.
Is that the same? Yeah? Okay, cool. Funny enough, who you're talking about.
Funny enough, here's a fun little tidbit about Julie Andrews. She was the original Eliza Doolittle in the musical version of My Fair Lady, was brought over to do the Broadway version because I believe they had it over on the West End. I'm not sure. I can't confirm that. Don't remember that part, but we're moving on. So a couple years later, they adapted into a movie. They do not cast Julie Andrews in the movie, which she then becomes available for which to do another movie, Mary Poppins, and thereby wins a big, huge award. And on her speech, during her speech, gives a thank you to the casting director of My Fair Lady for turning her down.
Oh my gosh.
It was a glorious night. There's your little tidbit about Julie Andrews.
And look at her now. She's doing a voice on Bridgerton.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I can't think of her name. And she's the narrator.
She's the Lady narrator. Whistledown?
Whistledown, thank you.
Oh.
I almost said Featherington, but I knew that was the name of the other family, not the writer. So, yeah, thank you.
Gwen Krantz says, sing it, Trey. Sing what?
Sing the Julie Andrews song. No pressure.
Oh, Gwen says, don't be sorry, Troy.
Brilliant.
Oh, you are a brilliant woman.
Sing the song from the Spoonful of Sugar song that you were singing.
Oh, okay, sure. Sorry, this turned into a diatribe about Julie Andrews, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It's okay. In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. And just like that, the job's a game. And I don't remember the lyrics. Ah! A spoonful of sugar.
This will be good. This will be good. He's looking up the lyrics.
Let's see.
Makes the medicine go down?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And every task you undertake becomes a piece of cake, a lark, a spree. It's very clear to see that a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down. The medicine go down. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. In the most delightful way. All right, there you go.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
That was fabulous.
Thank you. Thanks. Sung by Troy.
Troy. Thank you, Troy. Can I have your autograph?
No. Anyway, back to our lovely guest here.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So one of the things that was really intriguing to me is that as you've been talking here, you have mentioned looking up things on YouTube. You've mentioned that you're also a teacher are an educator at the Art Lab, you are also actively doing painting. So you are still learning yourself about some of these many different art styles that we've mentioned so far. What has really stood out to you the most about being an artist and this kind of learning journey that you've had?
I guess the thing that stands out to me the most is how much like patience you have to have. And it's easier to have patience with other people because you're trying to encourage them in their art journey. And it's not as easy to give yourself that patience and that room for growth. Like, I can encourage somebody all day to continue their painting and give them advice on how to improve and tell them, like, maybe to use a different brush stroke or a different technique or approach it a different way. But you can't seem to give yourself that advice when you're the one painting and you're also the teacher. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So just like giving yourself that patience.
Emily, give yourself that patience.
I have no patience. That's so hard. That's really wise, though. Sorry.
It is. No, you're good. So thinking about things that maybe you haven't delved into, is there still a medium that you're wanting to learn or that you haven't delved into just yet?
Yeah, oil painting. So I have all of the equipment for my oil paintings. I just haven't, like, opened them. I haven't opened those tubes yet because like I said, I'm procrastinating. That's still life. It's just not the greatest right now. So I'm just, like, trying to bide my time with my acrylics. That sort of thing, yeah.
Understandable.
Yeah.
You'll get inspired someday to, like, just crack that open and dive in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I actually even tried, like, doing still life with acrylics.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, well, this dries faster. I know it won't require as much time as the oil stuff. But I think you can just achieve so much more, like, human-like paintings with oil because it dries so slowly.
It's got that look that those paintings have that acrylic doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
What's something about what you do, what's something about you, what you do when you're painting or whatever, that makes you go, yes, this is why I do what I do?
I think when, like, towards the end, when you're adding the final details and it starts coming together, that's when you're like, yep, I did that. I love that. I'm coming back tomorrow.
When you can finally see the fruition of your work. Yeah,
and I guess, like, sewing, there's so many layers, right? But when you're adding, like, the final touches, those final little details, and everything just starts coming together.
Trey knows that with these pants he's been working on with all the trim. Look his face. What is it, like, 30 yards of trim you sewed onto little strips to make these pants?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk about these pants because they are honestly just the amount of expletives running through my brain when you mention those pants.
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
I should say that Seth, like, is in love with these pants, but the process of making the pants has been just absolute redonkulous. Anyway.
I'm going to pause real quick to call out Kaz's comment. She's on Twitch. Sassa Pants looks like he's about to have a Macbeth moment.
Oh. All right. I'm done for the night. Good night.
That was from, gosh, was it last week or the week? I don't remember anymore.
Oh, that was. So Sassa Pants was definitely from last week, and the whole Scottish play comment was from a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Kaz, for that. That was brilliant. Anyway, back to what makes you go, yes, this is why I do what I do. The costuming thing, yeah. I mean, hopefully that you had that moment for with those pants, Trey.
It is like I've made peace with those pants.
Peace pants.
They're my peace pants, sassy pants.
For when you're grabbing a bag of peas.
Grabbing a bag of peas and getting a call that I'm going to go to London and perform in an opera.
While you're wearing your peace pants.
Peace pants. Paola, one question that I have for you regarding like more modern technology. We're at this juncture where we've got technology coming in with digital art, as well as more physical mediums with oil, watercolor, etc. How do you maybe help find those learners come to balance or come to, what's the word I'm searching for? Come to peace, we'll just say, with digital art versus more physical mediums?
Well, one of the things that is like the biggest difference between the two is going to be your undo button. With digital media and like digital art, you can undo something so quickly, and you don't get stuck like on that project, right? Because you don't like brush stroke you did. But with physical medium, you can't undo it. You have to find a way to fix it. So it's a whole, like, it's a different mentality, I think. And I've tried digital media, but again, I only get so far because I don't have all of the techniques necessary to keep going at it or to make a painting or something look the way I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easier to undo, and it's easier to just click undo or erase something. And you also have like layers you can do in digital mediums. Usually the program will give you like layers, and you can, like I said, delete, duplicate, all of these cool things with those layers.
I imagine blending colors is totally different then too, because
yes,
the raw paint and being able to mix two colors and get exactly the hue you want, and and being able to make that gradient happen in the way you want, with the direction you want, is probably a totally different process than doing it digitally. And I feel like having real paint probably does that better.
Right.
Especially when you're dealing with oils and things like that, where at least I have limited knowledge of this, but with a real painting, there's a texture to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you do have like a wider variety or range of textures with digital media because you can switch between them so quickly.
I meant like physically on a canvas. There's like a
three-dimensional,
like you can touch and feel the paint strokes sometimes. Versus digital media, you just print it off. It's super flat.
It's just flat. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I think that's like Van Gogh is a really good example of that.
Oh, yeah.
Where like if you, you know, if you see a Van Gogh painting, it's very like vibrant. It's got this awesome texture. But if you see it in person, it's very like thick with paint. Mm. Like he quite literally created that texture with the paint.
Cool.
And so like Starry Night looks, you know, like the three-dimensional Starry Night is still beautiful. But the real life Starry Night is like inches thick of paint.
Oh wow.
So
now I want to see it in real life.
Yeah, I guess it's like really big too, so that's another thing.
I tried doing that with I tried doing that with Glass Fusion.
Okay.
In fact, I have to find it. I think I might have left it at the art lab. I made a little dish where I was trying to make, like, recreate kind of a Starry Night inspired thing. It turned into a dish. I shaped it into a dish, and it was just a test piece because I didn't, you know, I'm playing, I'm learning. But I didn't know about that three-dimensionalness of the original, and I guess maybe if I had studied the original enough, I would have known that. But now that you say that, I could recreate some three-dimensionalness with the glass fusion if I don't flat fuse it so much. So thank you for
saying that. Right. If you change like that temperature, right? Mm-hmm. The glass fusing temperature. Yep. Yeah.
Pull it down, make it a little more 3D. That is cool. I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
That's why I'm here.
So what is something you are inspired by?
Right now I'm really inspired by Caravaggio. Okay. He's like a Baroque painter, and he's very controversial because he used like common people in his paintings, as well as like sex workers in his paintings. Okay. To depict maybe like religious scenes.
Interesting.
So so he was really talented. He was commissioned by the church, I believe, for some paintings, but he was using like normal people in his paintings, also depicting them in like normal attire, which I guess was like a big no-no.
Imagine that.
And he was really like realistic and kind of grotesque with some of his techniques.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's why it inspires me right now, is because it's like, it's so realistic. He painted from, you know, life models, and he painted them in a life scale. So I don't know if you guys knew, but the Minneapolis Institute of Art,
okay,
had one of his paintings recently, like an original Caravaggio. And it was the Judith and Holofernes.
Okay.
So it's basically this princess like beheading a general who was enslaving her people, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. So the painting is really, it's a beautiful story. It's really cool. But his painting is like life size. He studied like even the spray of bloods and stuff, I'm sure, to recreate it. And I guess it was really impactful at first, like really grotesque, but obviously now it's more like, wow.
Yeah.
So, huh. Mm-hmm.
Now I want to go look that up and see it.
You should. It's really, really cool. And he does a lot of like high contrast, which is what I do. I find it really hard to like make soft brush strokes. I kind of like the contrast, so that's why I'm like, I kind of understand this.
Cool.
So, Paula, if you won like an all expenses paid trip across the world to specifically go and visit some places where they have art, or like famous artists' work of art, mm-hmm. what would be in your top three places to go?
I think the Met in New York is a huge gallery. There's a lot of really pristine pieces there. The Louvre in Paris, France, I believe, that has a lot of really magnificent pieces. But also Florence, Italy is like the Renaissance, the birth of the Renaissance. That's like where I would also go, is Florence, Italy, because of the Michelangelos, the Botticellis, the Raphaels, like all of that. Just give it to me.
That's up my alley too.
Yeah.
So cool.
So we're going to start a GoFundMe for right. Paola.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
If you would like to help fund the trip to the Louvre and to, what did you say, Venice?
Florence.
To the Louvre, to Florence, and to the Met, please email us and sponsor us. We love you at themoderam.com.
Right. It's not too expensive.
No.
So, yeah.
What did I see over the weekend? There's this thing going on with the Van Gogh Museum that's in Amsterdam, I believe it is. They were doing a crossover event with Pokemon, And they did a couple of like promo trading cards with that were inspired by some of his more famous works. Like a
Wow.
there was a Pikachu wearing a straw hat, done in the art style of Van Gogh. There's this one of like Eevee standing in a field somewhere, and then they've got a Starry Night sort of thing. It's really random what Twitter will put before you, and then go, "You like art? You like Pokemon? Here, have this random thing that you now know."
Yes. I love crossovers like that.
Was great. Now all of their merch that's around that is sold out, but it's wild to see the like crossovers for those sorts of things.
Yes. Yeah, because then it gets like different people from different industries, like talking and communicating and
Yeah.
yeah.
Is there a particular artist, like either modern art, or if you could have someone like one of the great masters, who would you want to have a collaboration with on a painting?
Oh my gosh, that's a lot of pressure. I don't probably Michelangelo, just because he's like, to me, he's like the OG,
Yeah.
because he kind of dominated everything, statues. I mean, have you seen the pictures of his David statue? It's perfection. So yeah.
Yep, we're nodding.
Mm-hmm.
For the people listening, we're nodding.
I'm nodding very hard right
It's
now.
good
But
radio. Yeah. I think that's
it's
a
also
solid answer.
intimidating. Yeah.
Solid answer. I mean, I don't know how old Michelangelo was when he did that, but I feel like he must have been pretty practiced by then.
He was actually like 22 or something
Oh,
like
geez,
that.
of course. Of course.
What?
Of course.
God.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was in his early 20s.
Wow.
Now,
So,
I
I'm
think,
kind of behind.
but for someone else, because it's all kind of perspective too. For someone else, even where you're at in your art is where someone else feels like where they should have been at 18 or 20 or whatever. So I feel like that's kind of relative because everybody's good at something. So, and someone else isn't yet.
Right.
So I feel like that's just a perspective thing. 'Cause like
Absolutely.
I didn't do, I was trying to think of the year. I didn't take any of my designs or fashions or anything to New York Fashion Week until I was in my 40s. There, I said it. It is never too late. There's many
No.
lifetimes in your lifetime to live. So
Yeah.
it's not about what number of chronological years you've been around.
Right.
I think Kim Hale on TikTok is in her early to mid 50s, if I remember correctly. And she is getting back on Broadway. She's done a couple of shows now and booked a couple of gigs. And like after taking many, many years off for not booking gigs, now she's booking things. She's getting pretty popular and she's posting a lot of videos, and girl can work. Like Kim Hale, if you're listening, please email us at trey@emodrom.com.
All these people. Shameless plugs everywhere.
Shameless.
But yeah, I used to think like, oh, I'm too old to take singing lessons, or I'm too old to. I used to want to be an actress when I was younger. That was what I wanted to do. So when I was in high school, that was my dream. I wanted to be an actress, and I never really went after it as like a profession. I have done some things, but never like I'm not. Obviously I don't even have an IMDb page, but like it's not too late. I feel like I still could. It's not the same dream as it
Yeah.
used to be, but anyway, back to you.
Are there any particular projects that you would love to do? Like any future dream projects that if someone came to you and said, Paula, Paula, we would love to offer you a commission to do this, and what would make you say yes?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I guess I kind of have been asked to do something, but I'm supposed to help paint a mural at the art lab.
Oh,
And they
yay.
want me to kind of help lead that. And I was like, yeah, because right now Van Gogh is like, we just got done seeing some of his stuff at the Mia. And Starry Night is just like iconic. Like, why not? Let's do it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I know. I was like, yeah, let's do this. Let's do this thing. But now I'm just gonna have to do a bunch of research on how to, transform a whole wall
I am
with the
so,
help of like other people.
yeah, oh yeah.
Sorry.
I'm glad you told me this. I didn't know, and I'm so glad that you're doing this. That's so cool.
Yeah, and I think the direction they want it to be is like the members get to paint a section of the
Okay.
mural. So as each member paints like I don't know, a square or something, it becomes the Starry Night, right? And it's collective and done through all of the members, so it's
Neat.
something that they create together. Yeah.
Kind of like that coffee table by the couch is all the mosaic.
Yeah.
I love that too. So for anybody who's wondering what in the world the Art Lab is, so that you have an idea, it's a maker space. So it is a place where people can go and do art and feel free to dabble and feel free to just dive in and make it their own somehow and discover what works for them. And there are a bunch of different art forms offered and a bunch of different classes, and the classes are open to the public or you can get a membership. So there are many ways to get involved there, which I love. 'Cause there's probably something for everybody, and that's kind of the magic of it. And the community it creates there is amazing. And if you don't have a maker space near you, you should create one. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe not for everybody, but like seriously, you should find one near you and go be part of it somehow, because it is a magical place.
Yes.
I was actually doing some research, and there's something like that near me. I just haven't had an
Oh.
opportunity to go to that. So there
Ooh.
is likely one in your area. It may be called something different. It may not be an art lab, but look for maker spaces, art labs, those sorts of things. They are probably in a city near you.
Yeah. Or even sometimes there are ways to make that happen through various art organizations, even if they don't have like a building. We've heard of art guilds and other communities that have done things together for art. So there are ways to look them up and find them. So how can our audience support you in your work?
Right now, I would say following me on Instagram, liking my posts. I mean, that's always encouraging, is when people like your posts or leave a nice comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully I will have like original pieces that I can maybe sell or something on a website. I'm trying to learn how to run a website.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So, yeah, just on Instagram right now.
And
And
oh, go ahead, Trey.
I think we're about to ask the same question. Paolo, what is that that Instagram?
Oh, it's at Paula Paints.
And that's
That's it.
Paola Paints.
Correct.
Paolapaints. Nice.
Mm
Yep, that's great. And you can see some of her art up there right now and different videos and things like that that you've done, and hopefully some new stuff eventually as well. So go give Paula a follow.
Well, Paula, I have to say that the last hour, I have not been able to meet you before this evening, but Emily has been talking about you like nonstop, and I can see why. You are so knowledgeable, you're so hungry to create, and you're so passionate about your education of others and encouragement of others. like, it's infectious. So anyone who's listening, anyone who's near the art lab, please, I encourage you to go take a class with and from Paola here so that you can also be inspired like I have been this evening. Paola, thank you so much for being on tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys. It's this is definitely a journey. It's been a lot of fun, actually. I really enjoyed it, and you guys made it, you know, really comfortable for me. So thank you so much.
Well, as we close this episode out, Emily, I think you have something to tell us.
I do. It's super exciting. Sorry, I totally interrupted you.
It's okay, go ahead.
So on Sunday, this is an announcement I wanted to tell everybody. On Sunday, October 8th, which is this coming Sunday, we have a very special episode. And it is, when we first started the podcast, it was almost 2 years ago now. And we were testing the waters and the technology and our abilities, my ability to not screw up my own mic volume during a podcast. And so like we were testing things out, and the way we did that was we hosted a live script reading of Romeo and Juliet. We did it. I can't believe it's been 2 years either. Yeah, it's been, it speaks to, well, a lot of things, but our guests and our audience, and this has been wonderful. So anyway, we had six people at once, and we did this live script reading of Romeo and Juliet, and we, because there are way more characters than six in Romeo and Juliet, we all had like hats and props where we'd switch them off to switch characters. And so there were six people on the screen, like Zoom call style, and we're switching hats like mad. And it was hilarious, and everybody made their character their own. So like we had a Mercutio with a Mississippi accent, and it was hilarious and brilliant, and everybody chipped in their amazing talents and skills. And so we are going to do that again. If you know us, we don't do things small. We kind of go for it or nothing at all. So because it's been 2 years, it's long overdue, and so we want to revisit this concept. We're doing it again. However, this time, instead of Romeo and Juliet, we're doing an unrehearsed live comedic script reading of Midsummer Night's Dream. And Midsummer Night's Dream is already a comedy, and we're going to make it worse. This time, we have a cast of 10 people, and some of them you might recognize from past episodes, and some of them are new, and all of them are just wickedly talented and super funny. So join us on Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Mountain, 3 p.m. Central, and 4 p.m. Eastern time on all of our normal live stream channels, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. And I guarantee it'll be ridiculous.
And then the very next day, we have another really exciting guest, Alisa Quitney. Alisa is a graphic novelist, romance writer, and the former editor of Virgo. So tune in next Monday night, next week, at our usual time for that exciting episode. So thank you for tuning in tonight. This episode, along with probably every other episode forever and always, will be dedicated to Joe Capone, our moderator, fellow comedian, passionate encourager, and greatly missed friend. You can find us pretty much wherever you tune into podcasts. For updates, announcements, and more, find us on social media under Modern Romantic. Thanks, everybody, and have a painterly day.
Yay.
I love that.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Oh my gosh, Emily, I cannot believe this incredible chocolate we've been tasting. Ugh, we had to bring Eric and Jaleesa from Storyboard Delights back to discuss.
Absolutely we did. What is it about your chocolate that makes it so magical?
Ooh, it's magical because we infuse so much fun in our chocolate. It's not something serious, but it is a serious experience. We make sculpted chocolate bars that have stories to tell, like, for instance, our Red Riding Hood bar.
Oh, the Red Riding Hood bar is super fun. first we start with the digital painting on the front, and it tells the first part of the story of Red Riding Hood walking into the woods. And then when you unwrap it, you have this sculpted bar of Big Bad Wolf sitting in Granny's bed. And then you taste it, and the flavor profile wraps up the rest of the story. And so you first, when you bite into it, you taste the earthiness of the chocolate, which is the hunting grounds of the Big Bad Wolf. And then you've got the pasilla chili pepper, which provides sort of the prowl. It's kind of spicy, not quite, but then the guajillo bites you at the end, just like the Big Bad Wolf.
You can find us at www.storyboarddelights.com. Pick out whichever chocolate you want, whichever story you want, and we will ship it right to your door.
Fantastic. I'm going to storyboarddelights.com right now.